It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Thank you for joining me here on another edition, the year-end edition of Mind Your Business, year-end 2018. And what a show we have in store for you. Yes, you're tuned to Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the Newark, New Jersey metro area, worldwide at mybradio.com. We thank the listeners throughout the year. We are in the top 10 in New York AM radio according to the Nielsen ratings, and that is a very, very special honor. And I thank you for your confidence in the content that we present week in and week out. I want to open by thanking the many who put in their heart and soul into this program and make it the success that it is. My colleagues here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, Srili, Rena, Miriam, Hoodie, Eliana. I hope I didn't leave anyone out here. And really everyone on the team in some way, shape, or form do play a critical role. And to the great folks at 77 WABC, James, Matt, Chris, Lexi, Justin, thank you. Without you, we could not have gotten this done week in and week out. I also want to give a special shout out and a thank you to the B-Tank magazine. The most recent column that we had in there featured the interview I had with Bruce Katz of Samuel Hubbard. He's the CEO and founder and CEO of Samuel Hubbard. You can access that interview and every single show that we've had over the past year by visiting mybradio.com, mybradio.com. We're also on C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV, the OG Podcast Network, Player.fm, iTunes. We have a robust YouTube channel. We provide, as many have said, this is really like you can get, a college, I'm not going to say you can get a college degree just by listening, but this is a virtual college. You get the access to premium content from thought leaders in the business world every single week here at 10 p.m. And I look forward to continuing to provide you, the wonderful listeners of Mind Your Business, with great premium business content in the year ahead, 2019. So the format for tonight's show is that we selected the top highlights from the past year, and we're going to be presenting them to you. We're going to be hearing from Alan Fagan. He's the Executive Vice President of the Orthodox Union. Amanda Holmes, CEO of Chet Holmes International. Shep Hike, an award-winning customer service expert. Jeffrey Hazlett, who's no stranger to the listeners of this show. Stephen Gaffney. Baruch Green of Lilac and Cream. Lee Souls, he wrote a recent, fantastic book on sales. Stephen Shapiro, NSA Hall of Famer. Jay Caldwell and Margalit Gerzelis from the CFO Squad. Loida Noriega Wilson from Brands, Paycheck, and HR Services. Bruce Katz, as previously mentioned, the CEO and founder of Samuel Hubbard. Rachel Hirsch, the Northeast Region Director, Sales Director at Prestige Capital. She's really the National Sales Director at Prestige Capital. Mark Crowley. Michael Williams, the President of the NFL Experience. Ari Sukier, the COO of Elitra Health. Rachel Krause, Vice President of Marketing at Westfield World Trade Center. Menachem Lubinsky, President and CEO of Lubicom. Dick Scholes, founder and chairman emeritus of Best Buy. And our giveaway this evening, I also want to mention, let me give a shout out to some of the recent winners that we've had. Neil Tui, he won the 12 minis from Lilac and Cream. Larry Schreiber, he won Talk Triggers by Jay Bear. And anyone who follows us on social media, then, they get to see who the winners are. Tonight's giveaway is going to be the amazing book, Be Amazing or Go Home, 7 Customer Service Habits That Create Confidence with Everyone by Shep Hyken. You're going to win a hardcover autographed book by one amazing individual, Shep Hyken. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Again, text over the letters MYB to 64600. One lucky listener is going to win Be Amazing or Go Home. We're going to go straight to the great content right after this short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining me here on this edition, the year-end edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. We're now going to give a listen to the interview I had, to a portion of the interview I had with Stephen Gaffney. Let's give a listen.
You know, you bring up a really great point, because a lot of times I'm brought into organizations and we do this analysis, and I have to report to my clients that it's sometimes that person, but sometimes other leaders that have created an environment where people are just shut down.
Right.
Here's another example of lack of honest communication where it impacts honesty and innovation. I've brought into a lot of organizations where they actually don't use ideas. And that, first of all, the number one way to motivate people to give ideas is to show that you'll use their ideas. So I was talking to this general a while back, and he said, you know, I don't understand, Stephen, because we actually are asking for the workforce for ideas, and we're using some of those ideas. I said, well, okay, what are you doing when you use those ideas? How are you reporting back to the workforce? And it was actually over the phone coaching.
Right.
And he didn't answer. I said, what's happening? He said, you know, you're raising a really good point. We're using employees' ideas, but we don't let people know. So let's go back to my earlier point.
Right.
The number one problem is not what people say. It's what they leave out. So I coached him, you've got to actually have and give people feedback on how you've used those ideas. So sometimes we've trained and conditioned people to shut down by getting defensive or upset.
Right.
And sometimes we've trained and conditioned people to not give us ideas because they think, what's the point? There's no use sharing ideas because they're not going to use it. And if they do it, they're going to manipulate it and take advantage of those ideas and never give me credit. Whatever it is, the biggest problem is what's not getting said. And that's why we deliver these great results, because it's always about how to get that unsaid said. And you know something else? I just love talking about this subject.
Right.
You know the number one reason why people don't share? It's fear. Fear of retribution, fear it's going to hurt somebody's feelings, fear it's going to go on the list. And the other reason why people don't tend to share is because they feel like they're going to be judged.
Right.
So you're sitting there in a meeting and you have a crazy idea.
Right.
You think, well, should I bring it up or should I not? Well, I don't know how people will look at me. Or if I raise an issue, maybe they're going to think that I should already know it. So they're going to judge me. So here's the key to get anybody to open up.
Okay.
Make them feel safe and that you won't judge them, and they will speak the truth, because it takes much more psychological energy to keep something inside than to let it go. People will want to share because it takes a lot of energy to keep it inside, as long as they feel safe and not judged. So that's the key to getting anybody to share anything.
Stephen Gaffney, and if you want to hear the entire interview, you could visit mybradio.com, mybradio.com. But of course, part of open communication with your employees is making sure that you understand them and the way they feel about their work. Let's move on to employee satisfaction. That's something that could make or break your business. Let's give a listen to Mark Crowley.
Tell you a funny story.
Sure.
I just spoke in Chicago to a large professional organization, and the majority of people in the room were CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I drilled down and told them the numbers, and I told them several stories and basically tried to emphasize the fact that these numbers apply to you. You're not outside of the universe. So when you hear only half of people are happy going to work, half of your people are unhappy going to work. If you're hearing low engagement applies to you. So then, for whatever reason, there was another speaker about 2 hours later, and he was one of their members, and he got up there and he was doing his own presentation, and he had this live sampling. So he said, you know, basically go on to your phone and just plug in an answer. And the question was, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being outstanding, how engaged is are your employees? And like 80% of these CEOs, not an hour or two later, said that theirs were outstanding. I was like, even the guy who was running the sound system looked at me and said, "Are you kidding me?" So the metrics that they use, the survey system that they use, basically comes back with all clear signal, and so they just move on and they don't really take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask employees to fill out one of these surveys, they're like, "Why should I care? They're not going to do anything with it." So we kind of have to decide at some point that this matters. And I think what's going to drive this, the biggest driver of this, is full employment. So companies that are really treating people badly, they're going to lose people and are losing people. We had record number of people leave their jobs last month, not just in America, but in Great Britain. People are saying, you know what, I'm fed up and I'm going to leave and I'm going to go to a company where they're going to care about me and treat me differently. And the companies that are losing good people, they're going to realize I'm going to have to do something about this if I don't want this to continue.
Another great guest here on Mind Your Business, Mark Crowley. We now move to the interview I had with Loida Noriega Wilson, Director of Operations at Brands Paycheck and HR Services, and we spoke about the importance of training employees, such an overlooked item, especially in small business. Let's give a listen. How important is training? That's my first question. My second question is, how can a small business even dream about implementing a training program?
Two great questions. So the first question is, I think training is very important because it ensures that the staff member, let's assume you hire a new staff member, mm-hmm. that staff member comes to you and they're very excited to do a good job. Mm-hmm. They want to do a good job. They want to support your company and your clientele. Mm-hmm. Very often they don't know exactly how because they're new. They don't
right.
know your culture.
Right.
They don't know your clients. They don't know how you as a small business owner want to run the business. No two businesses run alike. They want to do their best. So what happens when you have even a simple training program to help people answer the telephone correctly? There's some very, very basic rules. And unfortunately, very often we miss those because we just do what we've always done.
Right.
When your staff has an opportunity to be trained on some of those basics, I think your company comes across more professional. Mm-hmm. Your staff comes across feeling more professional and more confident when they're dealing with your clients and your customers, as it were.
Yeah, another great show with Loida from Brands Paycheck. I mean, they're in the business of of employee satisfaction. Of course, they handle payroll services of a wide range. But hearing that advice from Loida was special. We're now going to move to the interview I had with Alan Fagan. He is the executive vice president of the Orthodox Union. He's also a great individual. I happen to know him personally. And he shared something so really profound, and that was lessons from the corporate world as it applies to the nonprofit universe. Let's give a listen.
You would concur, a nonprofit of this size, to a degree, really does need to be run like a business. And I guess the next part of my question is if there's any other particular differences between the business world and the nonprofit world. Or maybe those are two very different questions.
No, I think it's a very fair question. Okay. I'm not sure that a not-for-profit needs to be run as a business, if you use that in its broadest sense.
True.
That is necessarily with the same motivations,
right.
Same sets of values and mission.
Now I'm referring to the mechanics.
But the mechanics are, I think, enormously important. What every well-run business requires, what every well-run, I should say, organization mm-hmm. requires, mm-hmm. Is a dedication to efficiency, to making sure that money is being spent in the most efficient, economical way possible in order to accomplish the goals, the mission of that organization, and maximize return on investment in the case of for-profits for their shareholders or their owners, mm-hmm. in the case of not-for-profits for the community. If you're using community dollars, you have an absolute obligation to make certain that they're being used as carefully and as well and as economically as they possibly can. That requires the most efficient management that you can. The other aspect is to be sure, and this is true for any organization, that the services that are being delivered with the highest quality, with the greatest professionalism, and that the recipients of those services are feeling that their needs are being responded to in the most professional way and with the greatest degree of responsiveness.
That was Alan Fagan, Executive Vice President of the Orthodox Union. Our giveaway this week is the book, Be Amazing or Go Home, 7 Customer Service Habits That Create Confidence with Everyone, by none other than Shep Hyken. One lucky listener is going to win an autographed hardcover book. This book is a must. It's a must for employees and employers. I've actually had a good friend of mine that sent over. He said, hey, you know, once I listened to the show that you had with Shep, he went out and bought, I was like 20, 30 copies for his whole team. We know here at Bottom Line, everyone here got a copy of the book. It's a great book. One lucky listener is going to win it. All you have to do is text over MYB, the letters MYB, to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to win Shep's book, Be Amazing or Go Home. We're now going to move along to a clip from the interview I had with Jay Caldwell and Margalit Gezerlis of CFO Squad. Let's give a listen. You know, it's no secret that most businesses, probably all businesses, at one point started with an entrepreneur with a vision and kind of flew on the seat of his pants. You know, whether he knew what he was doing, he didn't know what he was doing, he had a lot of passion, and he just moved forward. But at the same time, the financial side may have been challenging to him, and he didn't really keep the books right. Not that he was, doing anything wrong, but just he didn't understand even, how to handle all that. But then the business started to grow. Are you faced with that? What's your advice for a company to then say, okay, it's time, you've been a kid, you became a teenager, now you're an adult. You're an adult business. You know, you got to do it correctly. What advice would you give to a business that reached that point that they've matured and now they got to do it professionally?
I would say, if you're thinking of an idea, start keeping your records early.
That's a great piece of advice. That means don't just charge in as an entrepreneur and ignore the financial side. Handle it professionally from the get-go.
You know, because catching up is sometimes the difficult thing. Hmm. It's not impossible. I would say we frequently get many clients in that situation where all of a sudden they're wanting to grow. They want to add a second store, or they want to expand, or they want a franchise, or they've been operating even for 30 years and they had a great passion, but they can't take it to the next level unless investment bankers or other investors come involved, and all of a sudden they have nothing to provide them.
Wow.
So the biggest problem I've seen in some cases where they have a great idea, they've been doing great guns, and they've gathered the interest, whether it's through just news or publicity, that people know about them, mm-hmm. and they want them to go to the next level. And they say, show us your financial statements.
And what?
Some of those bankers, guess what? They're expecting to see them at the end of the day, not in the future. They expect that
snap
if you're ready, I want to see them now.
Wow.
So sometimes that's where, and investment bankers have called us many times to say, I like this business. I want to think about funding them or acquiring them or working with them. But can you go check them out to see if they're ready to be funded, to be invested in? So that's where, mm-hmm. But we catch them up.
That's going to be my question. Unless, Margaret, you want to jump in?
I just wanted to add that. And it's really important because you do need that financial reporting, as Jay said, mm-hmm. when you want to make those steps and you want to build out your business. But keeping good records is actually helpful for the now, too, because, a lot of the times businesses will start, they'll focus on the revenue, how to get more business, which is obviously important. Mm-hmm. But maintaining your records, you see how your costs, how efficient your business is. So it's just good on all fronts to really start right from the beginning.
Jay, Margaret, really smart individuals. You could find out more information and to contact them, CFO Squad. Just Google it and you'll find out more. Well, January 1st is fast approaching, and we know on many minds, especially executive minds, is fitness, right? Executive health. We spoke with Ari Sukhir of Alitra Health. Let's give a listen. What are some of the health-related challenges that specifically C-level executives face? And I imagine, they put in, 80-hour weeks, 100-hour weeks. You've probably seen it all. Let's talk about executives in the C-suite and the necessity to take care of their health.
So one of the things that's great about the process is, and we didn't even walk through yet the process, we'll get there.
Okay.
People spend, 2 to 2.5 hours with our doctors. When they come in, we try to get the stuff out of the way that mandates the fasting so they can eat. Mm-hmm. But then the first step is an hour conversation and physical exam with the doctor. Now, your typical physical exam with the doctor is focusing on physical, primarily, a quick physical, and then that's it. Over here, it's a conversation about life. And people come in with lists of conversation topics, questions that they would never probably bring up. And right. we see fascinating.
And they never have the time to ring up with a regular doctor.
Correct. They won't give you the time, you know. Right. Stress and anxiety is huge. You know, you have, and it's amazing, you have a high profile, you know, just impressive person, and he comes in and there's a conversation with the doctor about, you know, just the levels of stress they have to deal with. No sleep, anxiety, nutrition, exercise comes up. Again, that's outside of the regular medical type stuff that's going to come up. And there's many medical, I don't want to get into the clinical stuff as much, but outside of that, there's a lot that these people deal with, and they don't have a venue to have a conversation with it. So a lot of our job in many of these cases is just peace of mind. This is an issue. This isn't an issue. And just that alone for them is phenomenal. But in cases where there are real issues, if someone's really dealing with, you know, overwhelming stress, they're not handling it appropriately, you know, then we provide the resources after the fact to do some follow-up. But we see a range of issues, and it's really every time we go through a process, and we do like weekly meetings with our team, and the doctors are amazed, and sometimes, and they've seen a lot. Dr. Nemitz, who you saw, he's seen tens of thousands of patients over the year in the old affiliated physicians model. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was seeing 2,000 patients a year, and you know, in this model, we're seeing much more. We get to delve into it with them. Very interesting.
Folks, I drank the Kool-Aid, and I actually visited Elytra Health. I highly recommend it, especially to executives out there. You could find out more information. Just Google Elytra Health. Now we move to the great interview with Michael Williams, president of NFL Experience in Times Square. And just a special shout-out, this was hosted by none other than my good friend, Jeffrey Hazlett. Thank you, Jeffrey, for hosting this great show. Let's give a listen.
What lesson? What's the marketing lesson that you think other businesses can learn from what you're doing?
Yeah, you know what I would tell you is when you look at the world's great brands, they don't work to create customers first and foremost. They work to create fans.
Mm.
And I think when you start,
I like that.
When you really start to establish yourself that you're connecting with them, not just to sell them, but you're not just talking to try to as a transactional customer relationship,
right.
but I'm looking to create a fanatical fan. Of ultimately my brand and my product.
See, that's important. That's a very important thing, because I don't know if everyone knows this listening, but there's some new stuff that's going on the marketing side. Like Google's putting all this stuff in. If you're mm-hmm. not engaged with the people,
that's right.
they won't even deliver the email.
That's simply correct.
You know, so they're looking at your reputation. They're mm-hmm. looking at your engagement between, again, what Mike's calling his fans. If you don't have that engagement, your message isn't even going to get through.
That's right.
So this is even more important now.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think when you start to look at it through that lens, I think it changes everything about how your philosophy sort of addresses what your strategy is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that's really important is to create that, especially in today's world, with people and their own social voice and their own social activism and what they're going to do within their communities. The best way that I can connect my brand with the marketplace is to engage you in a meaningful and relevant manner, and then ultimately let you become an evangelist for us.
That's awesome.
Right? Because there's only so much I can do. There's only so much I can do to basically get my message in the marketplace. But if I get you to speak on my behalf and tell people within your own social group what a great time you had, what the experience was, and what that value of them doing it themselves is, that far and away outweighs any sort of, quote, traditional advertising you'd be doing.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, Michael. Before we take a commercial break, I want to let the listeners know, remind them, our giveaway this week is none other than the book Be Amazing or Go Home. One lucky listener is going to win an autographed hardcover copy of Shep Hyken's book Be Amazing or Go Home. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Again, text over MYB to 64600. Good luck. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great, so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505.
That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. This is the year-end edition. 2018, the top highlights that you've heard here on Mind Your Business. Now we're going to go to the interview, a cut from the interview I had with Amanda Holmes, CEO of Chet Holmes International. Let's give a listen.
It's called the Best Buyer Strategy, and the place that this came from was actually my father, while working for Charlie Munger, right, Warren Buffett's business partner, Berkshire Hathaway, he had bought a small newspaper business. And at that time, they were not even on the charts. They weren't ranked at all. And my father was given 2,200 different advertisers to go and reach out to get their advertising. Mm-hmm. And after he researched this 2,200, he realized that 95% of all the advertising was actually purchased by only 167. Hence, the best buyer strategy came to birth. So he reached those, what we call now a dream 100 strategy. So those dream 167 clients, he went after them with pig-headed discipline and determination. He reached them twice a month by phone, twice a month via mailer. And of course, today we can couple in so many different social media channels as well. And it's just about being in their face, in their place, in their space over and over and over again until they just, they have to take that meeting with you because they have to know what is this. And it all came from this place of education, going back to that stadium pitch idea of how can I bring something of value to you and then bring you from the not interested parts of the buyer's pyramid into the buying now category. So the best buyer strategy, go ahead and write this down if you have your pen and paper. There's always a smaller number of best buyers than there are all buyers. There's always a smaller number of best buyers than there are all buyers. So instead of reaching or spending the money to research to reach out to 2,200 advertisers, instead he spent even less money, but only on those 167. Now they were the largest in the field, right? They were the biggest, the Fortune 500 companies. So it took a little bit of time, and I will tell you, 5 months in, they didn't get one client. They hadn't gotten one client. Can you imagine going after somebody for 5 months? Would you have deterred away from this strategy if after 5 months you don't get a client? Well, on the 6th month, he closed the largest contract that that industry had ever seen. And subsequently after that, they closed 28 more clients, and he doubled sales in the 6th month. And he managed to continually double sales all by this concept of finding your best buyer and going after them with vengeance. So what's one client that would produce way more clients than anything else? So maybe your average client costs or makes you $5,000, but you have another client that would make you $100,000, or maybe you have $100,000 compared to $1 million client. Who are they? Can you then market to those specific best buyers?
Now, folks, be honest. Was it not worth it even just to turn in for that little clip from Amanda Holmes? Such great advice, week in and week out. And by the way, I want to thank all those that email me, call me, meet me on the street, and give me great feedback about the show. It is deeply appreciated. You know, it means a lot, and I really appreciate it. We're going to move along to the to a clip I had from the interview with Dick Schulz, founder and chairman emeritus of Best Buy. I mean, he was and is the brain of Best Buy. And we, of course, had to talk with him about the number one challenge facing every single brick-and-mortar business, and that has to do with e-commerce. How do you make it all work? Let's give a listen. Question here, just as far as Best Buy goes. We've all, you know, seen the news about how they've aced the ability to manage brick-and-mortar, yet at the same time, e-commerce. Could you share just some advice on that?
Well, I think for Best Buy right now, clearly it's been an evolution of our need to move even more aggressively towards where the customers are in pursuit of their needs around products and services. And while we have a long and successful heritage of offering and managing products and services in our retail stores, it became obvious consumers were much more rushed into doing a much more diverse list of duties and responsibilities for family, for themselves. And the internet, obviously, and online shopping became a much more convenient way in which people could access what was important to them. Instead of having to devote countless hours or lengthy stays or trips to investigate, they could do it much more easily online. And so Best Buy scrambled, if you will, to make the experience that our consumers, first and foremost, would have on our website clearly able to buy what it was they needed and buy it easily, quickly, effectively, and get those values that we were presenting in the marketplace. So first came brick and mortar, first came the actual touch and feel, real shopping experience, then came mirroring that, if you will, to online representation, where consumers could actually access specifications, comparisons, and much more detail on what it was they were looking to do. And so now we are actively engaged in both segments of the market, do about 85% of our business from our retail stores, about 15% of it online. And the online piece is growing double digits each and every month. And it's been a real plus, obviously, for our company to be able to stay in lockstep with our customers.
And it's part of the challenge of to the great team here that works at the Mind Your Business, behind the scenes for the Mind Your Business program, getting such great C-level guests. I mean, Dick Schulz, Best Buy is what, 125,000 employees, and to have him share his business insights is unbelievable. Well, we move to another great guest that we've had on Mind Your Business, and a great personal friend of mine, Shep Hyken, the go-to person in America about customer experience. Let's give a listen. But are there any other actionable tips and that you, as the really one of the foremost world leaders on the subject, can share with the listeners of Mind Your Business?
Well, we could go 8 hours if you want.
But
let's just give you a couple, three really good ones.
Sure.
We already talked about that moment of magic card, which mm-hmm. creates service awareness. But I want you to think about this. We keep talking about and using the term customer service.
Right.
Customer service is not a department. It's a philosophy, and it needs to be embraced by everybody. It's everybody's job. If you're not dealing directly with the customer, you're probably supporting somebody internally who is. And if you take care of them, then they can do their job more effectively. And that's how it works. Customer service is everybody's job. And by the way, we talk about the concept of customer experience, and people mm-hmm. say, well, what is the difference between service and experience? Years ago, they were the same. In my mind, they were pretty close to the same. But today, customer experience is defined as every single touch point that the customer has with anything related to the company. And that means it could be something as static as a website. It could be reading an ad. It could be talking to somebody, which is a lot of what the customer service we've talked mm-hmm. about today. But it could also be, I just received my box. I open it up, mm-hmm. and there it is. I mean, think about, you have an iPhone, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you remember the box it came in?
That's right.
Isn't that a cool box?
That's right.
Isn't that a cool experience,
that's
just
correct.
Opening the box?
That's correct.
And that's part of customer experience. So it's everything. So here's what I want everybody to think about. I want everybody to sit down with their team, and I want them to define what the journey is for their customer. This is called a customer journey map that you're creating. But this is what most people do. And most people, when they consult about this, they look at the top line. They look at all of the touch points the customer has. Example, you're going to take a flight. You're going to go online and book the reservation. That's a main moment of truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big touch point, even though it's not people to people, although it could be if they picked up the phone and
right.
called. Day
right.
of departure, you check your bag at the curb, you go to the ticket counter on the inside, you're greeted at the gate, the flight attendants, you're greeted at the destination, you get your bags, right?
So many touch points.
That's and many in between, flight attendants walking by and just waves
right.
at you, right?
That's right.
The trade table comes down, and Jan Carlson in his book, Moments of Truth, the trade table comes down. If the trade table is broken when it comes down, what does the passenger think? I wonder how the landing gear is going to work. am I right?
Okay. It's
So true.
Right.
And people don't make that corroboration.
So we create the top line touch points. Then we look underneath what's happening that drives those touch points.
Shep Hyken, he's a gracious, one gracious individual. He actually gave me a couple of copies here of his amazing book, Be Amazing or Go Home. And we're going to do it as a giveaway tonight. So if you want to win, one lucky listener is going to win it. Everyone will be lucky if you go out and buy it. The name of the book is Be Amazing or Go Home, 7 Customer Service Habits That Create Confidence with Everyone by Shep Hyken. If you want to win this one copy, well, it's going to one lucky listener. All you got to do is text over MYB to 64600, MYB to 64600. One lucky listener is going to win Shep's book, a hardcover autograph book, Be Amazing or Go Home. Well, now we move along to the interview I had with Rachel Krauss, the VP of Marketing at Westfield World Trade Center. Let's give a listen. Let's talk about Westfield's brick and mortar strategy. We know that Westfield is, you know, a series of beautiful mall spaces throughout the world. They obviously are faced with this conversation day in and day out. Perhaps you could share. I'm not asking you to share anything sensitive, of course, but some strategy or even tips and advice for people out there that are faced by the challenge of an Amazon, of e-commerce with their brick and mortar presence.
Absolutely. It's a customer-centric world. Customers know what they want and they will get it in the fastest, cheapest sometimes, or easiest possible way. Mm-hmm. And as we go through the thought process around developments and around curation and around programming and activation and experiences that we want to populate into the brick and mortar environment, mm-hmm. we are laser focused on what that customer experience is all about. Everything from, and this is not related to Westfield World Trade Center because we don't have parking on site, but everything from your pre-trip and your arrival. Where do you park? Where's the easiest place to get in? Are you coming in with a stroller? Where's the nearest elevator? So really thinking through that customer journey to make sure that we shorten that journey so that it is with the least amount of stress and the least amount of hardship possible, and that you still enable a phenomenal customer experience, and you have the right stores there, and you have the right amenities, and you have the right stop when you need the stop, and you have the right place to break, and you have the coffee place is right exactly where you wanted it to be. So it's really thinking through that perspective and building around the customer experience.
Yeah, we had to share tips about brick and mortar and e-commerce. We know that's on everyone's mind. Also, a shout out to B-Tank Magazine, because that's where our first piece with Rachel Krauss, VP of Marketing at Westfield, appeared. Also, a special shout out to Mishpacha Magazine. The Take 5 column had appeared throughout the year, so a special shout out to them as well. Now we move along to Bruce Katz. You know, having a great customer service can make the difference between a successful business and a failing business. Let's give a listen to Bruce Katz, CEO and founder of Samuel Hubbard.
And everybody who came to the company, I said, look, every customer is, we've got to make that relationship and we've got to make it count. So on a basic level, I said, one of the things I hate is, you know, I thought we're going to probably get some phone calls. And so how are we going to handle those?
Right.
And we later, we did some mail order catalogs and like everybody in the company was on the phone. I mean, phones ringing off the hook right. In every which way. And I said, we are going to answer every single phone call with a person. We will never, ever have a robot that goes, press 1 for this, 2 for this, 3 for that. Sorry, we're having an unexpected amount of calls. Bop, 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 bop. Everybody hates that. No, nobody finds it more convenient to press 1 for this, 2 for that, 3 for that. I don't understand for the life of me why, like, you know, when you call Hewlett Packard, somebody doesn't say, good morning, Hewlett Packard. I have a problem with my printer. Let me put you over to the printer division. Good morning, Hewlett Packard Printers. How can I help you? How many people does that take? They spend tens of millions of dollars on marketing, and then they alienate their customers with this horrible treatment. And I said, we are never going to do it. And when the phones overflow, we pay $5 a phone call to have it go to an answering service that still answers the phone and said, I will take a message and we will call you back. And so we get about 2,000 phone calls a week on average. We have 8 people answering the phone. And it's very interesting because I have a wonderful guy, Chris, who runs it. And we had a meeting one day with some of his people. He's trained all these people. And they said, boy, we love working at Hubbard Shoe. This is the best job we've ever had, you know. And I said, well, I know we have a little, you know, pasta on Fridays and, you know, we try to have a family right. orientation. But right. what is it you love about working
right.
here?
Right.
And they said, we love it because we never have to say no to a customer.
Wow.
You empower them. You give them.
We say yes. And my point of view on this thing is, you know what? First of all, I trust people. If one half of 1% of the people, you know, try to do something that they shouldn't do, I don't care.
And you're not going to penalize the other
99%. I'm not going to penalize everybody
right,
for that.
Of,
you know, you know what it feels like when you stay in a nice hotel and they want to double check your room to make sure you didn't eat a pack of potato chips and you're spending $400 a night for a room? I mean, what right. what are they doing? Right. What are they thinking?
Right, because of those few that spoil it for the rest. Yeah. You can't penalize everyone.
And it doesn't even matter
right.
if you eat the potato chips, really. Does it really matter? And so, you know, we basically say yes. And if a guy said, you know, I wore them, I thought I was going to get, you know, more time on the sole. First of all, we have a resoling program. We resole the shoes. But, you know, sometimes we have to replace the shoe for somebody, or we swap the shoe, or whatever it takes, we want the people to be happy. We want them to feel like this is a hospitable place.
Right.
And if people want to talk for 20 minutes about their bunion and their experience with their shoes for their whole life, so be it. Nobody's trying to hurry anybody off the phone. So if I could just say one thing about how to give great customer support is treat people the way you would like to be treated in every instance. And you do not want to wait on 17 minutes on hold. You don't, you know, you have to have enough people to answer the phone, and you have to treat them courteously.
Thank you, Bruce. Now we move along to the interview I had with Menachem Lubinsky. He's the brain behind Kosher Fest. I got so much great feedback about his show. Let's go listen. Numbers and the opportunities within the Orthodox Jewish demographic. Let's start by talking about even the Orthodox Jewish population, let's say nationwide in North America, worldwide, just so that people understand that dynamic.
Well, the Orthodox community has been the fastest growing segment in the Jewish community. The Pew study points that out very clearly. The Federation study back in 2010 also pointed out the same thing. So, and we know it from just watching the growth of communities. Take a community like Lakewood, which has grown from about 20,000 to 70,000 and continues to grow. But what is important to understand here is that two things. Number one, the Orthodox community now has its own commerce. So there is a tremendous amount of opportunity within that community. We estimate that there are about 900,000 to a million bodies, so to speak, in the Orthodox Jewish community. That's an awful lot of people.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. That's an awful lot of people, and that's an awfully big market. And it's a very sophisticated market. It's a market that spends, that it's a market that is very educated. It's a market that discerns the difference in quality. It's a market also that likes to be challenged. New products, innovation, they're very much as they look different in some ways, they have their feet very much on the ground, and sometimes much more than people that are in the common culture.
Fascinating.
So I think that when we market to them, we have to put that in perspective. I mean, underestimating the intelligence, for example, has been a mistake that many marketers make. For example, and it's one of the reasons that I have a tremendous respect for you, because there's many people that come into the marketing field. They have a certain talent. They could be a graphic artist. But there are very few people that take that talent and look at it from a strategic point of view. And that's why you're so different, and you're in a different class when it comes to that. And why is that important? Because you're serving your client much, much better if you have that strategic background, rather than, you know, there are many people that can paint Picassos, but that doesn't necessarily make it good marketing.
Right.
If you, for example, the studies have shown consistently that if you tell a consumer how to use a product, the percentage of sales goes up. So, you know, so just don't slap the product, put it on the right. shelf and put a word incredible on the ad and hope that that's going to do the trick. It doesn't, you know, because, again, the benefit theory. What's in it for me? So talking about the Orthodox community, they're very sophisticated. They're growing numbers. We've been watching in the kosher food industry, where the food industry in general has been growing at about 2%, 2.5% a year. The kosher market's been growing at 12 to 15% a year.
That much of an extreme
Absolutely.
Difference.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Menachem. Now we move along to the interview I had with Lee Souls
a leading sales management strategist. Let's give a listen. Inside the book, you share an intriguing way to view prospecting. Oh, wow. We got to cover that. Yeah. Because, I mean, prospecting is like, how am I getting my future leads? How are they? What's your advice on that?
Yeah. Prospecting, it's so critical. Another question I like to ask audiences, who's your biggest competitor? And for most salespeople, that company just rolls off their tongue. It's company A, it's company B, it's company C. And I'll say, well, yeah, I'm sure they're a pretty good competitor, but there's one that's even bigger. And they'll say, oh, you mean status quo. There's a lot of books and articles that talk about status quo being a tough competitor, the choice to do nothing. Mm-hmm. But there's a competitor I've never found an executive or a salesperson perceive that is so critical, formidable, bigger than any of the other ones. Mm. And do you know who that is?
I'm intrigued.
Every salesperson that is calling the same person you are trying to get a meeting. See, we're egocentric. We think competition is about us. But let's flip it around. There is no one in the history of business who's had the job that every hour on the hour you meet with a salesperson. It's never happened. We're calling on executives, oftentimes are doing two, if not three jobs, and the likelihood of them taking a meeting is slim.
Right.
And they're getting calls from salespeople throughout their sphere of influence, through all the responsibilities that they have in the organization. And they're only going to take a select few meetings. So we need to be different right in that first interaction, because if we can't get a meeting, there's no proposal. Right. If there's no proposal, there's no deal. So it all starts right here. So it's the competition for FaceTime, and I don't mean the Apple technology.
Right, right.
It's being able to get in front of someone, and you have to intrigue them right up front.
Next, we go to the interview I had with Stephen Shapiro, NSA Hall of Famer. Let's give a listen.
So an airport here in the U.S. Asked their passengers, what's your biggest complaint? Everybody was loud and clear, it takes too long to get the bags. So they did some analysis, and they found that it took about 15 to 20 minutes for the bags to get from the plane to the baggage carousel. So they spent a ton of money on faster conveyor belts, more baggage handlers, newer technology. They got it from 15 to 20 minutes down to 8 to 10 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars that cost.
It was expensive. Sure. And, you know, in their mind, they solved the problem.
Right.
So they go back to the passengers, and they say—
And they did another survey.
Another survey. Now— What's your biggest problem? And they heard it was still the baggage claim process.
Wow.
So
even though they cut it in half.
Cut it in half. And that's sometimes what we don't recognize is how consumers think. So they started to look at this, and they realized that it cost them so much money to get it to 8 minutes that they couldn't get it to 7, 6, or 5 minutes. It would just be too expensive. And then they had an epiphany. What they realized was that it took the bags 8 to 10 minutes to get from the plane to the baggage carousel. But it only took the passengers 1 to 3 minutes to get from the plane to the baggage carousel. So instead of speeding up the bags, what did they do? They slowed down the passengers. They literally reconfigured the airport. So it would take, on average, 8 to 10 minutes for the passengers to get from the plane to the baggage carousel.
So were the people happier? I mean, like, what was the result of this?
Yeah, so people were happier because when they got to baggage claim, their bags were waiting for them. The airport's happy because they're walking past stores and shops and restaurants.
Right, extra opportunity.
Extra opportunity. And so the important point on this is that they were solving the wrong problem. They were solving the problem speeding up the bags when, in fact, the real problem was wait time. And wait time is made up of the speed of the bags and the speed of the passengers. But I would go a step further and say it's not that that was even the right question, because there's a lot of different ways you could look at it. So one opportunity is to change the wait experience in baggage claim. So I live in Orlando. People pay hundreds of dollars to wait hours and hours and hours at Disney World, but it's a great experience. So how could we change the experience? Again, that's a different question. So changing the question, it doesn't necessarily give you better answers, but it gives you different solutions that you can then see whether or not they make sense.
Special public thank you to Stephen. Stephen Shapiro was one of the stars at the Winning Edge conference that we had earlier in the year. Now we're going to move along to an interview I had with Rachel Hirsch. See, she is the National Sales Director at Prestige Capital, and she talked about, let's face it, every business at some point has an issue with capital. Let's give a listen. You know, why is it so important for a company to have immediate access to cash flow?
Yeah, I would say that cash flow is the fuel of your business. And if you don't have fuel, you're getting
out.
Nowhere.
You're out of business.
And quite frankly, you know, what people don't realize, I had an organic baby food company a couple of years ago, maybe more than a couple at this point. And they had a small loan from one of the, you know, big commercial banks. And they said to the banker, you know, your money is good just kind of to get us started, but we want to go to the trade show, and when Whole Foods walks down the aisle and wants to give us a big order, we're not going to be able to fill it because we have 15-day terms with our supplier, and they won't pay us for 45 days, Whole Foods. So we can't make our arms stretch that big. And the banker who knew me well said, speak to Rachel. We financed them. They are now really everywhere. I went to visit a friend in Michigan, shout out to Mary Kay, and, you know, her babies are eating this baby food. And I'm like, that's my client.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, this leads me to my next question, and that is, you know, you mentioned that you financed some very large companies also that were backed by VCs. Now, I'd love to hear this because I would think that someone who's, you know, that the VC is behind them wouldn't need your services. Apparently, I'm wrong. You're never wrong.
Correct,
thank you.
Maybe misinformed.
But,
never wrong.
But please explain that. I'm sure there are many people that have the same question.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, I mean, VCs, what are they putting money into? They want your ideas. They want to put your money into the research and development of an idea, of a concept, to create a company. They'll put money into the marketing of that idea. You know, the trade show you may go to, the whatever it is mm-hmm. to get the company going. But mm-hmm. they are not paying your payroll. They're not paying your light bill. They're not paying your carpet being cleaned.
Day-to-day expenses are not
interesting. It's not exciting to them. It's not what they're looking for. So I get many deals that are referred to me, and more these days, quite frankly, that are backed by large, large VC companies, especially in the tech world. We just got a deal, a robotics company, and one of the biggest names you would know, that's a VC firm, and they are using our money.
And finally, we go to Baruch Green, CEO and founder of Lilac and Cream, the importance of customer retention. Let's give a listen. Now, let's talk about customer retention. Okay, we all know in the business world it is five times more difficult to get a new account than it is to retain an existing account. Now, of course, anyone who's in the service business understands you have to service your customers to Correct. The nth degree, and that there's no excuses for, you know, for second rate service. However,
I must interject that cannot be stressed enough. In business, in any business, and we're all in business for sales, mm-hmm. we all care about our customers. Mm-hmm. Customer retention is key. You can underline that 17 times.
Right, and it's such a great point that Baruch is strengthening, because now we're going to talk about ways creatively to show your customer that you really are thinking about them in a way that you're kind of catching them off guard,
Correct.
Meaning that you're surprising them with a great relationship, or in sometimes it's referred to as showing them some love. You know,
exactly.
going out of your way. So, of course, day in and day out, whatever industry you're in, service your customer to the nth degree. However, once in a while, there are those special times, whether it has to do with a private occasion of that client, a mm-hmm. birthday, an anniversary of the founding of that business, or maybe a specific time in the calendar, Hanukkah, Purim, whatever, there are special times. What reaction have you heard from your clients that have taken the step and have said, you know what, I have my top 25 clients, I'm going to reach out to Lilac and Cream and surprise them, and they get that cheesecake? What's the feedback that you hear that demonstrates how important this is?
Well, that's a good question. The feedback that we hear is really phenomenal.
And you didn't say delicious yet, but...
yeah, you know, we do have our clients across the spectrum. We have in finance, we have in healthcare, we have in construction, we have in all types of different brokerage firms. The common denominator, the common line that I get many, and I can think of a few
okay,
in my head right now,
sure.
is you have no idea how good of an investment that was.
That's a great way of putting it.
How much business
investment. I love that word.
How much investing in a client is number one in client retention, because client acquisition is also an investment, and we all invest
right.
in that all the time.
Right.
Now, as you said, it's five times harder. The study that I actually saw recently said that it was five times more expensive.
Yes.
customer acquisition versus customer retention.
That's right.
And some companies look at it as an investment. I don't like the word investment that much because it takes away a little bit from the personal interest in your clients.
Good point.
But it is, as far, you know, on the balance sheet, it's an investment. To that end, we hear all the time, I landed 4 new contracts after I sent this to my prospects, or how many times I hear of increased business that was done because it stands out. Now, there are certain seasons of the year where people get all kinds of, you know, it's a gift-giving season.
Right.
And during gift-giving seasons, you're getting many, many gifts.
Right.
What I hear constantly over the years is that this one stands out, meaning I'll get feedback from clients and from recipients. We get this from recipients. I must have received 200 gifts over the gift-giving season. I can't tell you what most of them are, but this one stood out. So that reflects directly on the sender.
What a great show. Wow. This wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business. Again, you can access every single guest we've had in the past by going to mybradio.com. What? We're out of time. Of course, tune in again next week, next year, for more great content, business content, right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over 2 decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.